scores! Gilmore scores! With 1:03 left!
Off the glass, in left corner to Aguila. Aguila to the left circle. Passing to Yale, a shot. Save made by Aguila. Rebound, another shot. They score! The Flames win it! Yeah, baby!
They score!
And the sea of red erupts!
Flames Talk starts now on Sportsnet 960 The Fan. Here's Pat Steinberg and Aaron Vickers.
Okay, let's get it going on this Monday. It is Monday, July 8th, and we are underway this hour on Flames Talk, live right here on Sportsnet 960 The Fan, and of course, Apple, Spotify, Amazon, wherever you get your podcasts. Happy Stampede Monday. Hopefully you had a good first Stampede weekend. Steinberg and Aaron Vickers along with you on this Stampede Monday. Hello, Vicks. Happy Monday, buddy.
Hey, buddy. Good to see you on this side of the border.
Yeah, I know. I haven't seen you nor spoken to you since drafted in Vegas when... Is that by design?
No.
Since we both got stranded in Vegas, you had more of a milk run home than I did. And it's good to see that you're back here in Calgary. It's good to be back here in Calgary. How are we doing? We surviving the heat?
We are barely.
Yeah, barely.
I mean, it's no Vegas heat, if we're going to be honest. Like, this is a cakewalk compared to
That's
the
true.
45 degrees Celsius
that is
in
true.
Vegas. So I'm not even going to pretend like I'm sweating it out here.
Well, it's a good way to get things going. We're talking about Vegas, which was the set of the 2024 NHL Draft. We were down there for Flames Talk, had lots to talk about when it comes to what the Flames are doing. And you know what? You talk to a lot of people, the Flames and their draft class and the group that they brought into the organization about a week and a half ago, one of the better draft classes in the National Hockey League. And you talk to different scouting experts and different scouting services. Most of those services all give the Flames kind of that A-, maybe B-plus grade. Really like the job that Craig Conroy, Todd Button, and the rest of the Flames staff ended up doing. 10 players added to the organization at the 2024 NHL Draft. And to help break it down, we spoke with this gentleman prior to the draft and now have an opportunity to bring him in to break down the Flames draft class after the fact. Awesome to say hello to Chris Peters of Flow Hockey, who does such an unbelievable job of previewing the draft and getting you set for everything you need to know draft class wise, prospect wise every year. Mr. Peters, good to have you back. How we doing, my friend?
Hey, I'm doing well, guys. I like only partially recovered from the draft, but I think you guys caught me at the right time.
it's for you. Like, this is everything you do is leading up to those 2 days, and everything you do is all about getting set for that big event. How long does it take for you to come down off that high?
Well, I think I got like COVID or something right after the draft. So whatever it was, however long it took to get over that is about how long it took. So usually it only takes a couple of days, and then I get myself ready for 2020, you know, whatever the next draft is going to be. We don't get much rest in the prospect world.
No doubt. Well, I am curious, if you go over to Flow Hockey and check out your draft grades you gave the Flames, and we all know this, that, you know, it's always the all too early draft grades because there's so much that comes after it, but your initial thoughts, you gave him an A-. Chris, what really jumped out to you? What before we go into some of the specifics, why an A-? Why such a high grade for what the Flames were able to do over draft weekend?
Well, you know, I think for one, it's the totality of picks. I mean, having two first rounders, especially one in the top 10, helps a lot. But, you know, I think that there was a clear motive in this draft, which I always like. I like when you can kind of see the through line of a draft. And to me, the Flames put a major focus on skill and on production and on, you know, pedigree and proven in that regard to say, hey, you know, the numbers are what they are. You know, you get Zane Parekh, who had, you know, one of the most productive OHL draft seasons by any defenseman. You get Matt Bakegridden, who led the USHL in scoring and was also, you know, I put this stat out on draft night that the only guy that's outproduced him among draft eligibles in the last 10 years is Matt Coronato. That was by 2 points. So, you know, and so they add another guy to the stable in that regard. And I thought Gridden was one of those players that was a bit underrated, probably because of, you know, reasons that didn't come with his skill. You know, he talked about different things that he needs to work on and, you know, play away from the puck and things like that, but obviously he can score. And then, you know, same thing, there were 6 players that they drafted that were on my top 100, including Basha, Battaglia, Muse, and Misa. And so, you know, I also think they didn't overextend themselves. Like a guy like Henry Muse, I think there were certainly The skill speaks for itself, but there were enough concerns about some of the other elements of his game where, you know, that's a bet that you make in the third round that you feel a lot better than if you did it earlier. So that's good value. Same with Luke Mesa. I think that he was a player that everybody kind of knew and knew the skill level and knew what he can do. But if you can get that player in the fifth round as opposed to using any of those earlier picks, it certainly makes you feel a lot better about things. And then on top of that, I think, you know, there was a clear focus on Canadians too and getting as many Canadian players as you can. And I think that more Canadian teams are going to go that way.
Yeah, and understandably so for a lot of reasons in terms of the way things have gone over the last few years. Well, let's dive in and maybe jump in on some of the, well, go pick by pick, and I'm just curious as to whether it comes, whether it's you and judging where they got them based on your board or just your overall thoughts on some of these players. We got to start with number 9 overall, and I know there was a lot of, I don't know what the right word is, some slight disappointment when Utah selected Tiege Ginla at number 6 overall, but that disappointment quickly went away when Flames fans really started to learn more about Zane Parekh and the season he had with Saginaw, winning the Memorial Cup, and then getting an opportunity to hear from him and learn a little bit more about him. How did you see the Parekh pick at number 9 overall?
Well, you know, I think it was a solid pick. I mean, I think having Tiege Ginla off the board kind of takes the pressure off a little bit.
Yeah.
You're like, okay, well, you know, if what if their board looked different and he was not the next best player and, you know, and he was still there at 9, you never really know. But I think, you know, for me, Parekh was among, when we look at the 6 defensemen that were available, you know, I he was right in that mix of like the fourth or fifth guy, you know. And so, you know, the guy that I liked best that was still available among the defensemen was Silaev, and then also Bouillum I had as ahead of Parekh as well. But I think when you have a pick that high, and Calgary's obviously been, you know, burned by American players and different, you know, you can say, let's take the Canadian. And the nice thing is that the Canadian happens to be one of the most productive players in the OHL among draft-eligible defensemen. And, you know, I think that Parekh's defending has improved immensely. I think that he has, you know, decent size. He's got the right shot element to him. You have the dynamic kind of creativity. And I think in the offensive zone, he does a lot of things that most defensemen either can't or won't do. Mm-hmm. And I think that that's something that Calgary has really, they haven't had a lot of that from the back end, you know, in recent memory, in terms of guys that were really driving the play. So it is like having that fifth forward or, you know, fourth forward on the ice. It's like having an additional scoring threat back there. You know, I think he's going to take some time to develop, but really in the end, I think based on, you know, we talked about those top six defense, we didn't know exactly what order they were going to go in. But I mean, at number 9, being able to come away with one of those premier defensemen, I think is a huge coup for the organization, given what else they have, you know, currently in the system. You know, you didn't have anything like a Zane Parekh, and now you do.
Chris, you talk about the defensemen, and I'm just curious how surprised you were at the order and where the defensemen went. We look at Levshinov at number 2 to Chicago, Yakimchuk at 7 to Ottawa, Parekh obviously to Calgary, kind of in that run where Silaev goes 10 to New Jersey, Dickinson 11 to San Jose, and then Ziv Bouillum to number 12. Were you caught off guard a little bit by the later top end of the top 10 picks, that defense kind of run going, and the order in which we saw them?
Yeah, I think the Ziv Bouillum going 13th, especially with Philly trading out of that pick as well, that was probably the biggest surprise to me overall. It wasn't shocking to see Silaev drop as he did. You know, you have kind of he's under contract for a few more years in Russia. He's also not as offensive as those other guys. But then you also look at, to me, I think Ziv Bouillum, of the guys, he was my third defenseman on the board, but he was also the one where I was like, based on the totality of evidence, he's probably the guy that might shock us and be the best defenseman from this draft, just because he's outproduced Quinn Hughes and outproduced Cale Makar and Adam Fox at the same age in college. You know, like the totality of evidence is, hey, that player's going to be pretty good. And so the fact that he went 13th and was the last of the 6 defensemen to go, that to me was the most surprising. But it didn't shock me that Ottawa or Calgary, teams like that, were not going to take the American college player. So that didn't shock me as much, but it was more just the fact that of those defensemen, he was the 6th taken. That did kind of shake me a little bit there.
You mentioned earlier in the conversation about Gridden maybe being a little underrated, goes to the Calgary Flames at number 28. I feel like you're in a good spot to talk about his year-over-year progression because this was the second season in the USHL. Year one last season, 21 points in 40 games, led the USHL, as you mentioned, 83 points in 60 games. Where did you see sort of that year-over-year growth with him?
Well, I think it started towards the end of last season. We started to see a player that was figuring it out. He didn't know what he was doing when he first got here. The game was harder. It was way faster. He was still adjusting to North America. He actually speaks very, very good English. You know, so like he made that cultural adjustment over time. So I think that was all a factor. And then I think this year, not just Gridden, but Muskegon as a whole, they had a more veteran team. They had a team that was very, very well built. And, you know, having him and Sacha Boisvert, who also went in the first round, you know, really gave them a 1-2 punch. And so what we saw from him this year was much more confidence for one, which you would expect from a second-year player. But I think he really figured out how to get to the areas where he was going to score goals. And I think that his hockey sense, his offensive capabilities, his hands, his size, all allowed him to be a much more effective player. And so, you know, when he was looking like he was going to go to the University of Michigan, it made a lot of sense because he's that high skill player that they seem to love. And so it wasn't a surprise to see him go there. Now, obviously it's not going to work out that way. He's going to probably play maybe junior next year, which is probably better for him in the end, just because, you know, the academic element, when English is a second language, all those different things. There's so many different factors that go into that. He can just focus on his game, which I think he did last year to great success. And then, you know, to score 80-plus points in the USHL, it doesn't happen terribly often for a player at that age to do it. And so it really does say a lot about his skill level and his growth. And really, I mean, you look at that progression year over year, and it's absolutely insane.
How do you see that skill translating potentially to the Q, and then once he gets comfortable there and graduating up the ranks to pro hockey, whether that's going to be a bit of a stopover in the AHL or eventually the destination goal of the Calgary Flames?
Yeah, you know, I think next year he's probably going to find the game a bit easier. You know, it's the time and space factor is a little different in the Q than it is in the USHL. So, you know, I think that The key for him is to continually be challenged and to challenge himself to get better. I think he's going to put up a lot of points next year. I don't think that's going to be a real problem for him. He knows how to play. He knows how to get in there. There will be another adjustment, you know, the queue. There's another language adjustment and there's different things that you kind of have to deal with there. But obviously we've seen a lot of Russian players go through the QMJHL and have a ton of success. I think he'll be, you know, the next in that line. What I'd like to see, you know, just is more detail in his game, more better play away from the puck. He's talked about the fact that he really needs to work on his body language. He wears his emotions on the sleeve. Sometimes that can be annoying to opponents. Sometimes that can be annoying to teammates. And it was really annoying to scouts this year. So that's the other thing, is just, you know, playing contained and making sure that, you know, continuing to mature and understand how you need to play the right way. And you know, I think the foundation of that game was built, and I expect them to only do better next year with that.
We're chatting with Chris Peters, Flow Hockey, their prospects expert, and you can go check out Flow Hockey's draft grades. Flames got an A- from Chris and his crew over at Flow, and the two first-round picks, Parekh and Gridden, we've hit on. But then when you start going deeper into this group, I mean, when Andrew Basha goes in the second round, I know a lot of Flames fans were ecstatic because he was a guy high on a lot of boards. Same with Battaglia. I mean, maybe if you hit on the two second-round picks there in Basha and Battaglia and what the Flames are getting and how they might end up being nice value picks for the team.
Yeah. I mean, you know, I think the great thing with Basha that we saw is, you know, that medicine hat group that he had with, you know, with Cade Lindstrom when healthy and Gavin McKenna. I mean, that was just a thrill to watch, and he was certainly a big part of that. You know, he doesn't have the size factor, but I think that he got stronger this year. I think that he was harder to play against. You know, as his skating continues to improve, I think that that's going to be another element where he's able to do more with the puck. You know, you look at his production and his year over year progression. I mean, he was a late birth date, so, you know, I think there may have even been a little bit wanting some more from him this year. But he's every year he's been in the WHL, he's made an improvement. He's made strides. And then I think that, you know, with Medicine Hat having the quality that they're going to have next year, you know, there's certainly a lot of value there. I think there's also an importance to, you get a local kid, right? You know, that there is something to that. And you want, I think the Flames have been burned so much. You got to find guys that want to be Flames, right? And there's no question that Andrew Bashir, I mean, everything he talked about after the draft, I mean, how could you know that that's a guy that wants to be there and will do everything he can to get into that jersey. And that'll be big. And then, you know, as far as Battaglia goes, I think he was a bit of a surprise this year. You know, he really started coming on over the course of the season. He has good size. He's got good skating ability. You know, I think that the fact that he had 31 goals this year really, you know, showed that he's starting to find that refined scoring touch. And so the fact that the Flames prioritize guys that are kind of on the upswing of their, you know, really on the upswing of their trajectory, and I think Battaglia in particular is a guy where there's some athleticism, there's some clear tools that, you know, you get your player development staff, you want to give them players that they can work with and grow from. And I think that Battaglia was a guy that a lot of teams would have liked to have worked with as kind of that raw potential that he has.
So the other two that were on your top 100, that Muse and Misa, correct?
Correct. Yep.
What? So in your eyes, what are the Flames getting with Muse, a third round pick? Misa, as you talked about, they end up getting with a fifth round pick.
Yeah, you know, I think with Muse in particular, he was a guy that came into the year with a little bit of first round buzz because he has tremendous skill from the back end, highly productive player from Ottawa. You know, He also played internationally, and you know, we got a chance to kind of see him against top competition, which was helpful. But, I mean, here's a guy that averaged nearly a point per game last year. And the reason that a player like him doesn't go higher, there's usually a lot of flaws in the game, right? And I think that's absolutely true of Henry Muse. The defensive side of the puck is just it's still a work in progress for him, and that's going to need a lot of development. But I think when you have a guy that plays offensively as purely as he does, it gives you something to work with. There's a foundation there. And in the modern NHL, you need a good puck moving blue line to maximize your offense. And that's what he could potentially do. He's a very good puck mover. He has good vision. He makes pretty good decisions with the puck, but defensively, it's going to take time. And then I think, you know, there's probably some of that, you know, with it's not as big of a concern with Luke Misa because he's a forward. But again, this is another guy, late birth date, you know, had a good season, probably, you know, even a little bit better, probably gives him more. He's more on the hand skills. He definitely needs to work on his game and his detail away from the puck. He's not a big guy. So, you know, when if you're not, you have to have that competitive drive. I think there's been some, you know, kind of calls for him to be more competitive, more hard on pucks, and you're harder on pucks, and just being a player that, you know, gets involved in the fight a little bit more when he's not scoring. But he has this tremendous skill level that I think you want to continue to foster. And, you know, a guy like him, you know, get him into your development system, get him some time and see if the other elements of his game come out and he gets a little bit more detail. But both of those players, I mean, I think anytime you're picking a player in the mid rounds, there's going to be flaws that you have to work through. And there's also going to be times that, hey, you might find out within year two that maybe that player's not worth a contract. But I think if you're going to make a bet in that range of the draft, bet with that skill, because those guys are often going to find a way to impact the game.
Chris, how much do you think Misa's size penalized him in this draft class? And I went and had a look over on NHL.com. I think he's one of 10 players in this draft class, 5'10 or shorter, selected. So not a lot of quote-unquote undersized guys went. Just curious, if he was standing at 6 foot or 6 foot one, how does that change the complexion of his draft stock?
I think it changes it dramatically. I felt this year, more than most years, the size was such a factor on so many guys. There were a number of players that either didn't get drafted or got drafted very late that, you know, were sub 5'10", and you're saying, okay, well, clearly there's kind of this edict. Oddly enough, not as much with goalies, because we saw a lot of 6 foot, 6'1" goalies go, and that's one where it's usually, if you're not 6'2", forget about it. But you know, I thought that this year's draft, and certainly with Misa, that was a factor. But I do think that the play, like the in and out compete, was probably a bigger factor in him falling than the 5'10" because he is so skilled, and there is such a dynamic element to him that, you know, guys at that size, they can play if they have that dynamic element. But it's really about the compete level. So I think, but I think unquestionably in this draft, and that stat is perfect. You know, there just weren't a lot of guys that were going to be sub 6 foot that were going to have a real opportunity to go very high in this draft, and we certainly saw that this year.
Chris, I want to ask you about Trevor Hoskin as well, who went in the fourth round, number 106 to Calgary, who's now a freshly turned 20-year-old. He's off to Niagara University. When you think about overagers or double overagers going, he wasn't a player that was necessarily on my radar, but then you go and you look, okay, he led the OJ in scoring. He was dominant at the World Junior A Challenge. Just sort of what was your takeaway on that selection and the skill that Trevor Hoskin has, and maybe a little bit of a gamble with an older player?
Yeah, I always like these reentry players because you have a better book and you have an idea of where they're going. Now, Trevor Hoskin's interesting in that, you know, he is a player that, you know, obviously had a humongous jump in points this year, but also, you know, he's going to Niagara University, which it has not been, you know, a place where a lot of pro prospects go. However, you know, there's always, with the transfer portal being what it is, a good season there kind of opens your opportunities pretty quickly. But we've seen this with a number of players in the OJ, the different Canadian Junior A leagues, that when they have those 100-point seasons, those are the guys where if they weren't drafted, they're very likely going to be signed as college free agents. And I think a lot of teams are trying to get a jump on those players a little bit more now. And he's a great example of it. He's got the size. He had the production this year. He also is, you know, you buy yourself some time with that player because he's on the college track. So, you know, you don't have a super short timeline where you have to make a decision on a contract with that player. So I think bets like that, especially when you have multiple picks, and you've seen the player enough and you have a good enough feel, I mean, absolutely take a swing on those players because they you have a bigger book on them. You know they're a little bit closer to what they're going to be. And so it might be a little less ceiling, but you know where you're a little closer to where his floor might be.
Yeah. Chris, when you go take a look at all the draft grades that you handed out, it was Calgary, Anaheim, Chicago, Columbus, Minnesota, Utah, all got A's or A minuses, and then 2A pluses. Your highest grades go to Montreal and San Jose. What kind of stood out? Anything that really, if you want to touch on from another team or two, like what about Montreal and San Jose, for instance, got them into the A-plus range?
Yeah, so, you know, I think Montreal in particular was getting Demidov at 5 was a huge factor. You know, I think that's a player that I have a lot of faith in that it will be a top-end player. I think there was plenty of risk there with him. I understand why the teams that didn't draft him earlier and, you know, went in other directions. It'll be interesting to see how that plays out, you know, especially when you look at Anaheim with versus Montreal and in that one. But I think that, you know, they got him, and then they also got Michael Hage in the later portion of the first round. And I think those two players significantly increase Montreal's skill level in their prospect system. And it was something that they desperately needed to do. And really, you know, after last year kind of reaching on David Reinbacher and skipping over Matvei Michkov, you know, I think that was something that the fans were a little leery of as well. It's like, are they going to take the most skilled guys? And I think both in Demidov and Hage, they've gotten, you know, in Hage, they get a speed factor, and he also brings some more size. Demidov is just over 6 foot and burly and has that skill level. You know, as long as everything works out with the contract, and next year really is his last year in Russia, you know, you could be getting him pretty soon. So that was big. And then obviously, you know, with San Jose, it wasn't just Celebrini. They had a great, you know, getting Sam Dickinson, getting Igor Chernyshov in the beginning of the second round. I mean, they had so many home run picks that I think significantly improved their prospect system. So sometimes it's not always about just how the draft works. It's sometimes about how you've restocked your own cupboard and in areas where there were most glaring. We're not talking about, you know, need-based or best player available. It's just, you know, how did you restock your cupboard? And I think those two teams walked away feeling like they were a lot better than when they started.
And, Chris, before we let you go, I know that you're already focused on what's coming up for 2025 and next year's draft and starting to dive in there. What can we expect over at Flow Hockey, flowhockey.tv? What can we expect over there as we move into the summertime?
Yeah, well, we already dropped our way too early top 10 for 2025. And
okay.
We'll be doing some on-site. Yeah, so we're already diving in. I'll be heading out to Plymouth, Michigan in a couple weeks as well for the World Junior Summer Showcase, where we'll see James Hagans and Logan Hensler and Porter Martone and, you know, a number of players that'll be top draft prospects for 2025. But we got that, and then we're also going to be rolling out some much more, you know, farm system rankings and things like that, which I haven't done since I've been at Flow, but something I've done a long time over the course of my career, and I'm excited to bring back here as we head into the end of summer. So the prospect train never stops. It's a couple weeks off, and then you go.
Well, we really appreciate the time, my friend. Thanks so much for doing this today, and I'm glad it was another successful year getting ready for the draft. Have a good rest of your summer, and we really appreciate the time. Thanks for doing this, Chris.
Hey, my pleasure, guys. Always great to be with you. Appreciate
it. That is Chris Peters, Flow Hockey, flowhockey.tv, joining us on the Atlas Pizza and Sports Bar guest hotline to kick off this hour. Atlas Pizza, as we know, celebrate the summer soccer spectacle from around the world and cheer on your favorite country on the big screens at Atlas Pizza and Sports Bar, 6060 Memorial Drive, Northeast.
Flamestock is on the air and streaming on the Sportsnet mobile app. Sportsnet 960 The Fan, Calgary.
All right, continuing along this hour on Flames Talk, Steinberg and Aaron Vickers along with you on this Monday. Happy Stampede Monday. Hopefully you had a good Stampede weekend. And during Stampede weekend, as that was going on, at the same time, so was Calgary Flames Development Camp on the ice Thursday, Friday, and then scrimmage Snowy Cup on Saturday, all at Winsport. And you had an opportunity to be – you were there for all 3 days, right?
I was there for Thursday and Saturday.
Thursday and Saturday.
I took the option on Friday.
Okay. I wasn't able to make any of it, unfortunately. Other duties kept me away. But we had lots of conversations. We chatted with Ray Edwards, chatted with Brad Pascal. We heard from Zane Parekh and Matvei Gridin and Etienne Morin after they signed their entry-level deals on Friday. So it was a pretty eventful camp, all things considered. What kind of stood out to you as the Flames hit development camp this year? What were some of the takeaways from you as you had an opportunity to be up at Winsport?
For me, it was the amount of skill that was on display, at the Calgary Flames development camp. And there have been years past where you're going and you're watching, keeping a close eye on one, two, maybe three prospects that either were recent first rounders or looking to make the jump to pro or potentially compete for a spot with the Calgary Flames. And this year, you didn't really have that luxury because you try to watch one player and another player would make a high skill play. And you're like, oh, I got to catch the back of the jersey there to see who the name bar is. And then you're trying to watch them. And then another player makes another play.
Yep.
And it wasn't even necessarily the usual suspects that were executing these, not the always the first round picks or, you know, a top prospect or a guy that might compete for a roster spot with the Calgary Flames. It was spread all throughout, regardless of position, whether it was forward, defense. A few goalies showed really well, showed some flashes, showed some glimpses as well. So it wasn't so much that you could go and just hone in and look at Zane Parekh and see what the Calgary Flames, because then there'd be another project, whether it's Brustevich making a smart play or Luke Misa really opening eyes, or even going so far down the list to Joni Jurmo and Axel Hertig, who you're not necessarily expecting to come out, especially in the scrimmage format, and execute and pull off some really impressive plays. It was arguably, as long as I can remember anyway, and in terms of the ones that I've attended, probably the — not that you're going to call a July, not even training camp, but just a development camp deep, but in terms of the skill level that was on display, there was certainly a lot to watch for the Calgary Flames.
Yeah, and you know, I think it's always important to point out at any development camp, and I think that you and I have learned this over the years.
Yes.
I always tell the story, and this is I hate naming the player, but I always tell the story of, you know, the first time I saw Marcus Granlund after they drafted him in the second round, after seeing him at a development camp, and I thought he stood out the most. I was like, man, this guy's going to be an absolute player in this league. And you know, Marcus Granlund had a decent NHL career with the Flames and Canucks, and not trying to slag off
right.
the player by any way, shape, or form, but it just was, it's one of the you know, one of the lessons I learned that, you know, summer hockey and development camp is not really a good evaluator. And I think it's becoming less and less of an evaluation tool. Hell, there are teams, and it wouldn't surprise me if the Flames go this way in the not-so-distant future. There are teams that just don't do on-ice
right.
for their development camp. It's all an off-ice thing, and I think that's the way this thing is going. Summer hockey and summer hockey camps and getting on the ice, and like it doesn't necessarily fit what a lot of teams are trying to do. They want their players to be going through their own off-season programs, and then all of a sudden they're on the ice for these 3 days. It kind of messes with what they're doing for their off-season training. So wouldn't be a surprise if most teams go away from on ice at development camp. So I think it's just always important to point out that what you see at a development camp, you can't put anywhere near. You have to put a grain of salt into what you see in the preseason, and I think you need to do about 200 grains of salt with what you see at a development camp in the summer. That's not to say that you can't pick up some things, but I just think in terms of what it is as an evaluation tool, it's becoming less and less important.
Yeah, first and foremost, nobody is making the Calgary Flames in July. And you want to talk about how you need to kind of put things in context. You've got a player like Sam Morton, for example, who's turning 25 later this month, going up in camp against some players that haven't even turned 18 yet. Mm-hmm. You have a player like Zane Parekh, who was literally playing hockey up until the end of May and maybe even the beginning of June. I don't have the Memorial Cup timeline right in front of me. And then you'll have other guys that, you know, completed their season at the tail end of March. So some guys have been on the ice later. Some guys haven't had a break. Some guys have had too much of a break. Some guys are full on into their off-season training mode. Some others still haven't had their first break in terms of getting away from hockey at the tail end of the season. So you've really got to kind of contextualize some of the things that we see at development camp, but that doesn't take away necessarily from the amount of skill, pure high-end skill that the Calgary Flames had on the ice up at Winsport.
And so let's dive in, though, nonetheless, knowing all of that and the big grain of salt we just put on everything that we're about to talk about. What jumped out at you when it came to maybe some of the more exciting players that have entered the organization over the last 6 months or so, from Hunter Brustevich to Zane Parekh, Luke Muse on the back end, obviously Matvei Gridin up front, and then there's some of the exciting players from last year's draft, from Hanzek, Morin, so on and so forth. Just observations from you. I obviously didn't get eyes on. I watched the scrimmage stream, but I didn't see it in person. So I'm going to defer to you who was there, just to some of your observations on some of the players that stood out.
Well, Zane Parekh, first and foremost, you know, throwing a backhand no-look pass on his first shift, scoring the first goal of the scrimmage, if I'm not mistaken. And let's, again, we can even contextualize the scrimmage a little bit, because we don't know what the development coach is or what Craig Conroy instructed the players to do out there. There was a packed barn, as packed as you can get in Winsport, with the seats at one end and the glass being two or three deep with fans. We don't necessarily know if they were told, okay, play within your structure or go out there and absolutely entertain these Flames faithful, because the defensive structure for everyone was kind of lacking a little bit, and there were certain players making some plays you wouldn't necessarily expect them to see. Now, the plays that we saw Zane Parekh make are exactly the reasons that he was the number nine selection.
Yeah.
But even then, this is a player, again, that played through late May, has gone right to the combine, right to the draft, hasn't really had that break off. So he's, while he's a little bit rusty, he's still got sort of the mentality. And he looked like he was out there to entertain. He looked like he was out there to put on a show. And he certainly did that. And another player, I think, that did that quite well was Luke Misa as well, who's, granted, at FC Hockey, we had him ranked much higher. And you could certainly see the skill level and the speed that was on display, whether he was busting wide or creating plays. There was a number of different opportunities that he had. I think he finished with two goals. I don't have the official Brendan Parker of Flames TV score sheet in front of me right now, as he was chicken scratching that as he went along.
I saw that.
But he was another player that kind of opened eyes. William Stromgren was a player that honestly kind of looked like he didn't need to be there. He needed to be there, but he almost looked like he's graduated from those ranks right now.
And this will probably be his last one.
This will be his.
Yep.
And just looked sort of like a man amongst boys, even though, I mean, he does have the pro experience with the Calgary Wranglers under his belt, but he looked kind of head and shoulders over much of the rest of the class or the rest of the pool of prospects that were there for the Calgary Flames. But basically every player that you thought should do something, whether it's in the scrimmage or whether it was on sort of the skills session, that player delivered what was expected of them.
And I think that there is plenty of reason to be excited about Zane Parekh. I mean, when you're talking about a player with that type of skill, you look at some of the highlights, whether it be from the scrimmage on Saturday, whether it be from his time in the Ontario Hockey League. I mean, he just does things with the puck, and he does things against peers that you know, nobody does. And that's not to say that that's going to translate to the NHL or the American League when the peers are that much better and the talent pool is, you know, a whole lot less thin. But it just at that level, nobody does what he does. And the way that he walks the line, the way that he looks off players, the way that he is able to keep pucks through players, so on and so forth. It's a really, really special talent he has. And we're all fascinated to see how that's all going to translate to the highest level. But I don't think the excitement level got any lower. How's that?
No.
Based on what you saw from him at development camp?
No, not at all. There was no disappointment in Zane Parekh and what he showed. And again, grain of salt, it is a July development camp. But the thing I appreciate most about Zane is getting the opportunity to talk to him a couple times over the course of camp. And he realizes that where he is now in terms of his current skill level isn't enough to make him an impact player at the NHL level. Mm-hmm. He's well aware of what he needs to work on, whether it's size and strength, whether it's his skating. He singled out Cale Makar and Quinn Hughes, which are somewhat comparables for him. For us, we more liken him to an Erik Karlsson type with the way he approaches the offensive side of the game. But he realizes that his skating, where it's at right now, there's another level or two that he can get to in order to make him even more of an impact maker at the next level. He's just not a player that's satisfied with, oh, okay, I was the 9th overall pick and I led all Canadian Hockey League defensemen in scoring this year and almost cracked the century mark in points. There is no excitement around that for him. There is no, okay, job done, mission accomplished, I can cool it for a bit. He is so dialed and so focused on, okay, here I am now. Where do I need to be in a year or 2 years to compete for a roster spot with the Calgary Flames? And not just, you know, survive, but thrive. So he's identified a few areas where he can even up his game from where it is now. And it's a scary thought if and when he's able to get there.
So development camp's all wrapped up, and Craig Conroy, the general manager, wrapped up development camp with the media on Saturday following a 3-on-3 scrimmage at Winsport. Here's the GM of the Calgary Flames.
I want to ask you about Zane really quick, and we all know the story of him finishing high school a couple years early. He told the story of how Misa would have to get up at 6 a.m. where he could sleep in at 9 and then go right to the rink. How does accelerating his schooling help accelerate perhaps his pro career?
Well, it's amazing. You just think it takes something off his plate, you know, where the other guys are getting up, going to class, doing all the schoolwork on the bus. I mean, it sounds like he's such a good student, though. Even though he's taking college classes, it wasn't that hard for him. So that's pretty impressive.
On Hanzik, we talked to him a couple of days ago. He wasn't necessarily thrilled with his last season with the injuries and whatnot. How do you sort of get him back on track to where he's feeling good?
Well, the first thing we said, last year was last year. We're parking that one. We're not even going to talk about it. And then he got cut today. You know, I'm like, okay, this has got to be it. But injuries happen. That's what we said. He went from the groin to the hand. He had other things going on too. So it was just one of those years. And now hopefully he's going to be healthy moving forward other than this cut today, which is something else. But, you know, I think just kind of refocus and get him going. He looks like he's in good shape too.
Probably happy.
Sorry. Is the cut anything serious?
No. By the time they stitched him up,
okay,
he wasn't going
to
come back.
Yeah.
Must be pretty happy to know that he's out back home training with Martin Pospisil a little bit.
Oh, it's great because, you know, the one thing, Pospisil finished 3rd in testing last year, so I know he's going to push him every day. So I do think that's going to be helpful for him moving forward too.
100 Brustavich, when you go back and look at the Lindholm deal, what made him a key figure? Now that you've had him under the Calgary Flames umbrella for a little bit, what impresses you?
Well, if you just watch him today, the little plays, the way what he does with the puck, the way he sees the ice, he made a great play. There was a change going on. He threw it to space where to bank it off the boards, let his guy come off the bench and get it. Those are high-end, subtle plays that maybe a lot of people don't know, but he did it on purpose. He wasn't just throwing it there for – he was looking at the bench. He saw that. He sees the ice so well offensively. You know, he's a guy that we were excited to be able to get, and – you know, him and Zane both in the OHL this year. I mean, both 90-point guys, that's very impressive.
What's the plan for...
You guys try so hard to keep expectations in check when Zane's making behind-the-back passes on his first shift of the scrimmage. Does that make things a little tougher?
No, that's what he does. You know, like, that's the one thing, you know, when you bring offensive guys in, you want them to... You don't want them to play safe. You want them to do it, you know... There's time and place for everything, but you know, and then for him to score the first goal to kind of kick it off was fun. But yeah, he makes those plays. You got to let him be creative like that.
What were your impressions of Yanni Yermo this week?
He had a great week. I mean, he had a great game too. I don't think I was expecting the offense output today, but yeah, he's big. He moves well. He was competitive. Like, it was. I thought he's had a great week.
Back on Chris Stavich, what's the plan for him? Because you mentioned his season in the OHL. There's not necessarily a lot left for him to accomplish at that level, I feel like.
No, I would see him being with us here. You know, where here is, but in Calgary. I do see that moving forward.
Sorry. On Brustevich, I mean, between, I think you got Lipinski, you got Hanzik, you got Brustevich, who are all 04s who could go pro. With the three guys, like, I know you've had a lot of first-year pros sort of come in and have some bumps in the road. Some came in and had really good first seasons. How do you use the experience of the previous guys to help progress the guys who are coming in now?
Well, if these guys come in, we got to put them in spots to be successful. If they're offensive guys, they need to be on the power play. If they need to be put with certain partners, probably a little bit more, you got to mix and match to make sure they're with a veteran guy, with a younger guy, and put them in a situation to succeed. You don't want them to come here and take a step back. You want to keep it going. So, you know, that's what you're evaluating, and right from rookie camp all the way through through the preseason into the start of the season.
Taking a look on the outside of things, I mean, pretty good crowd here today coming to watch the game. What does that say about the Calgary fan base?
Yeah, I mean, they're excited. That's, you know, I was watching. I'm like, usually, you know, the glass is full, but now it's like four or five deep. So it was. I wish we did it somewhere where there was more seats because people could sit down. But it's exciting. And you know what? Talking to people on the way down, they're just excited with the draft, excited with the young guys and the prospects we already have in the system. So you know, they feel like we're headed in the right direction.
At this time last year, guys like Etienne Morin and Jérémy Poirier were your standouts in the defensive position. But since then, over the last 12 months, you've made all these additions through trades, and of course, Zane Parekh at 9th overall. How do you feel about the defensive position in terms of prospects, especially after all the work you've done over the last year to add players?
Well, I feel that was part of it. When we made the trades, we were looking for young prospects, and we hadn't drafted a lot of D. So to be able to kind of bring in more D and different types of D, you know, they're going to mix and match together well. Some are offensive, some are defensive, and to play them together, you're thinking, okay, that could be a good pair for the next 10 years in your mind when you're sitting up there watching. And that's what it was all about, bringing in more guys and build that kind of core group that you're going to have moving forward.
And the emphasis on skill in particular with guys like Hunter and Zane, that's definitely a noticeable thing, right?
Well, I think, you know, that's what I said. There were 17 goals today. I was like, I don't know if I thought 17, but, you know, usually it's like 6, 7, 8 goals. Yeah. But, you know, we were talking about the skill, and these guys showed it today. It's impressive. It was fun to watch, and, you know, maybe we don't want to – poor goalies. I really felt bad for the goalies. That was the one thing I did. I was like, it's not on them. But, you know, you do have a lot of skill out there.
Craig, William Stromgren, 1 year ago today, just looks like night and day. What have you seen, and do you think he has a chance to push for NHL games sooner rather than later?
Absolutely. I thought he was probably – from last year to the end of the year, the guy that took by far the biggest strides. I mean, and you watch him with the confidence out here, what he's doing. You know, it doesn't even look like the same player. So if he continues to do that, I can see him getting NHL games for sure.
And then you had four draft classes represented here. I think Stromgren and Coronado were the only guys from the 21 class. I guess you just, obviously, guys more experienced in your system. Did you see what you wanted to see from them sort of on off the ice? Because obviously on the ice they stand out because their games are more polished. But have you seen some stuff behind the scenes that sort of make you think that they can sort of show the younger guys how things should go?
For sure. You know, the one thing about them, they want to help the young guys. They want to, you know, be a leader, help them. And then even coming back, because I was thinking, should they come back to camp this year? But I said, I talked to them right after the first meeting, and they were excited to be back, and they were going to help the younger guys and show them what to do, and they really did. So I think to have them here was, you know, I think Parekh might have said, Zane might have mentioned, you know, watching Coronado. So in one of his interviews I heard. So I'm thinking it is good to have those guys back, and they're really good people and I think good leaders for the young group.
And I know you talk about wanting to build a culture here. Is that sort of part of it? Because I know you've talked a lot recently about, you know, the impact of some of the older guys in the NHL group. Do you want to sort of see that kind of permeate down to the prospect base too?
Well, you do. It's weird. Like this draft class, a lot of guys in the OHL, but there's just a lot of players. They all seem like they know each other. And, you know, they have a little bit of chemistry already. They're kind of hugging and they seem like they're really tight already. So to build that chemistry, it is about culture. You know, you want people that want to be here. That was one of the things we talked about. And, you know, I think the young guys think there's an opportunity for them, and that makes everybody hungrier.
That is the general manager, Craig Conroy, wrapping up development camp, which did wrap up at Winsport over the weekend. And another year of development camp in the books. And that's kind of the last on-ice talk. That's the last on-ice thing that we'll see from the Flames until rookie camp and the Penticton Young Stars Classic in September. By the way, are we going to figure out our way? Should we figure our way out there this year, you think?
I think we could probably hammer out those details off air.
Yeah, I think we should do it on the air.
Let's do it. Exactly, the negotiation begin.
Exactly what hotel we're going to be in and so on and so forth.
You're going to give the room number and everything?
Room number, absolutely. We'll leave a key under the
under the mat.
That's probably a good way to wrap up the hour. But just to wrap it in a bow, just your overall thoughts on, you know, you're over publishing the draft guide at FC Hockey every single year. We kicked off this hour talking with Chris Peters of Flow Hockey, getting a recap on the Flames draft. Now you just are coming back from a few days of development camp. Just your overall thoughts on, you know, how bright this future might look like for the Flames?
Well, I think the key word here would probably be optimism, because there was a lot lighter vibe even than last year, I would suggest. And when you add 10 players into your prospect pool, not all of them were there, but you add 10 players to your prospect pool when you're a retooling team and you're able to see the skill up close and personal and get to work one-on-one with some of the players you drafted, and then you layer in last year's class and you layer in some prospects again like Matt Coronato and William Stromgren, you start to be able to paint a better picture of the direction this thing is going. And it's all right. Not all of these players are going to turn out to be NHLers. Some of them won't even be signed. But it's all right to start envisioning what the Calgary Flames could be 2, 3, 4 years down the road with some of the names I've mentioned, and Sam Honzik and Luke Misa and Hunter Brustevich and Zane Parekh and so on and so forth. It's a lot easier to see the vision that Craig Conroy has for the Calgary Flames when you're able to see the skill in these 17, 18, 19, 20-year-olds up close and personal out at Winsport.
Aaron Vickers on Twitter at AA Vickers. My name is Pat Steinberg. Shan Cam, our producers this hour. Everything coming at you from our Groundworks downtown studio. Your local experts for foundation and crawl space repair.